So this is sort of a not widely known Buddhist teaching, but I was quite many decades ago when I read it and actually saw the movie, I said, wow, this is a profound Buddhist teaching. So since then I've tried to share it on a yearly basis, and it's called The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that, seen the movie. But I'm not sure if we see it sort of the way I'm going to present it today, which has a story of awakening, a story of transformation, really a story of how we go from where we are to really significant changes. And there's no better example of that than Ebenezer Scrooge. So again, for those of you, I'm sure, I mean, is there anybody who doesn't know A Christmas Carol? Good. So, you know, we're in the mid-1800s. We're in England, kind of the Victorian era. Things are changing. Industrialization has really changed a lot of things. Great disparities between the rich and the poor, not things that are not unknown. And so the main character of this tale is Ebenezer Scrooge, whose name has become synonymous with miserliness. But he was more than just somebody who held on to his money. He really only lived for money. He only lived for business. He was the extreme entrepreneur, perhaps, but in a not good way. I mean, the sense of like that's all that mattered was business. And so he's in his little business. His partner Marley had died 7 years ago. Just a little bit about him. External heat and cold had little influence on him. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. No wind that blew was bitterer than he. He was very bittered. He was very embittered. I mean, I think psychologically we can begin to understand him when we get a sense of his past. But he was totally withdrawn into himself. He was like the height of an egoist, that he really did not see outside of himself. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, "Dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars even begged from him. No children asked him what time. Nobody. Even blind men's dogs would shy away from him when they saw him coming. They would tug their owners into the doorways. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked. He liked to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, mourning all human sympathy to keep its distance. So, once upon a time, a long time ago, on Christmas Eve, we find Scrooge in the in his counting house on a cold, wintry day. The door from his room to his clerk, he had one clerk, he was always held open so he could keep his eye on him. So more productive. Wanted his assistant to be as productive as he could be. So we always kept an eye on him. And he was in a dismal little cell, a sort of a tank. He would be copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but he made sure that his clerk's fire was even smaller. It usually only had one coal in it. But he wasn't allowed to replenish it on his own because the coal box was kept in Scrooge's office. And he had the So we get the scene. I mean, it goes on and on, but this is the life he lived. And all of a sudden, there was the door opened. Somebody yelled out a Merry Christmas. It was his nephew, the son of his daughter. And of course, Scrooge's reply to that has resonated for hundreds of years, or 150 years, bah, humbug. All right. But Christmas, a humbug, you don't mean that. He said, I do. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor. Very interesting. Come, uncle. You know, what right do you have to be dismal or morose? You're rich. And it was a good reply. So he just said, bah, humbug. Don't be cross, uncle. What else can I be when I live in such a world as fools as you? Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, but not an hour richer. A time for balancing your books and have every one of them presented dead against you. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on their lips would be boiled in their own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through their heart. He's quite eloquent in his own way, as in all Scrooge. So I mean, can you see the nephew was the foil to Scrooge, right? You know, to Scrooge, everything is dollars and cents. Everything's to be measured. But his nephew beats to a different drum. So his nephew replies to him, even though I have not profited from them, I would say there are many things that I've derived good from, such as Christmas. I love Christmas. It's a good time, a forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they were really fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. Very profound. I think it really speaks to us today, right? We do often lead separate lives from our fellow man, especially people who are much poorer than us, or just lead much different lives, as if we are journeying on in different worlds, you see. And again, you know, if at Christmas time, as he says, it seems to be a time of year when everybody by consent sort of acknowledges our connection to people less fortunate. Unfortunately, for many, it's the only time of year. But anyhow, that is something else. So anyhow, he has a, he goes on and on. I mean, he just gives his uncle a hard time. He wonders why he even got married. You know, you're not rich. You can't afford things. You know, why are you wasting time on relationships, right? Saving money. So his son invites him to Christmas dinner. Scrooge said, over my dead body. And leaves. A little later, the door opens, and two gentlemen come in, Scrooge and Marley. Marley is his dead patient. Who am I? Who do I have the pleasure of address? Scrooge or Marley? What? Well, Scrooge says, Marley died 7 years ago this very night. Well, the gentleman said, well, we have no doubt that, of course, you'll be as generous as Marley was in the past. Mm-hmm. He said, at this festive time of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, right? So these men are taking a collection to help poorer people. And so Scrooge's answer, again, is, with a question in mind, are there no prisons? Plenty of prisons, the gentleman said, putting down their pens. And the workhouses, aren't they still in operation? And one of them says, they still are, but I wish they weren't. And the treadmill and the poor laws, aren't they still being vigorously enforced? Yes. Oh, I was afraid by what you said Scrooge, that something had stopped them from doing what they do. I'm very glad to hear. And the gentleman, you know, they don't quite get him, right? He's But sir, they really scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude. So some of us are trying to raise fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. So we choose this time of year. What can I put you down for, sir? Nothing. You wish to be anonymous. I wish to be left alone. That's my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help support the establishments, such as prisons and poorhouses, and those who are badly off should go there. But many can't go there, and many would rather die. If they'd rather die, they better do it. Decrease the surplus population. They go on, and Scrooge says, finally, you know, these things aren't my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to understand with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, sir. So are we getting it? Yeah. We're being set up for a wonderful story. But again, even though, like a lot of literature, the characters are being drawn kind of in somewhat extreme, and yet I think the sentiments, the feelings are not unknown, both in their extreme, but also just in a sort of normative kind of indifference or callousness that can infect us if we're not careful. And then again, poor Bob Cratchit, his clerk, these were the days when there was no holiday pay. Christmas was the one day. And, so Scrooge is begrudging him that Cratchit is not coming in tomorrow to work. Mm-hmm. And Scrooge says, Christmas is a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket, meaning his own pocket, every 25th of September. But anyhow, I suppose you must have the whole day off, but come in even earlier the next morning. Scrooge goes home, he eats dinner by himself, all alone, comes home to his house, dark, big, dark, cold, he's alone. And he has these kinds of unsettling experiences. I don't know if you remember, when he goes to his front door, there's a knocker with a face on it, and all of a sudden the face looks like Marley's face, right? And so he's a little nervous now. And then he goes upstairs, and there's some strange sounds and knocking in the houses, and bells start ringing, and all of a sudden the door opens to his bedroom, just flings open, and there is the ghost of Marley, the ghost of his partner, 7 years deceased. Same face, same look. The only difference was wound about him and being carried like a tail was a chain made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. Anyhow, he's quite scared. Because also Marley, his body is transparent. He can see right through it. And then he had this really bizarre kind of chain around him. Scrooge said, "What do you want with me?" "Much," said the ghost. "Who are you?" "Ask me who I was." "Well, then who were you then?" "In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. Please sit down." It tells him about his journey of the last 7 years. He sort of has been in a hell realm. All of a sudden, as Scrooge is kind of going on about, well, you're not real, and you must just be a product of my imagination. I just probably have indigestion or something. All of a sudden, Marley stood up, shook his chains, and gave out a yell, like a really horrible, frightful cry. Scrooge fell to his knees and clasped his hands before his face. "Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of the worldly mind, do you believe that I'm real or not?" I do, but why do spirits walk the earth, and why have you come to me?" Then he says a very interesting thing. "It is required of every human being that the spirit within them should walk abroad among his fellow human beings, travel far and wide. But if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world, oh woe is me, and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and actually been able to turn to happiness." And again, he cried out. So again, as opposed to Scrooge's purpose in life, right, Marley, who used to share his same philosophy of life, is now saying to him, you know, it is our duty to walk among our fellow human beings while we're alive, and to know them. If not, we have to do it when we die. "You are fettered, tell me why. I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you?" Scrooge trembled. "Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? Full and heavy as mine, and you've labored on it for decades. It is a ponderous chain." So this is, you know, in kind of Buddhist terminology, what is he saying? That each of us, by the actions of our life, by the way we think, by the way we act, by the way that we speak, we are all creating in a certain way our own imprisonment, whatever it is. And so therefore, the effects of that will be experienced by all of us. "Oh, Jacob, Jacob, speak comfort to me." You know, so Scrooge's getting a little worried now. "I have none to give. It comes from other regions and Ebenezer Scrooge, but now I'll tell you what I will. As I just have little time here, I cannot linger here. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. It never wandered beyond the limits of our money-changing hole. And so therefore I have to keep going. But Jacob, you were always a good man of business." Scrooge is trying to understand why what he's done his whole life should be now like chains to him. "Business," cried the ghost, wringing its hands. "Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop in the water in the comprehensive ocean of my business." So this is, to me, very important, you know. We all have our careers, we all have our professions, we all have our things we're doing in life. But what is our essential business as human beings? The ghost says he's realized that mankind, humankind, should be our business. Charity, mercy, benevolence. These are the true business of a human being. "At this time of the year," he said, "I suffer the most. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down and never rose up?" There is no light part of my penance. I'm here tonight to warn you that you have a chance yet to escape my fate, a chance and a hope that I am procuring for you. And this is, of course, he's going to be visited by three spirits. Right? This is, so he sees clearly that even though he it was the opposite of whatever he believed, that the way Marley lived his life has left him a ghost fettered by the chains of his own making. And that he's telling Scrooge, and this is your fate, but you have a chance. Tonight's your chance. I mean, there's lots of good things. So let us move on. So the first, you know, 1 a.m., the bells ring or something happens. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet so not so like a child, but like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him the appearance of having receded from the view and being diminished in its proportions. So this is the spirit of the past. And it's interesting. It's young and it's old. I think it's sort of like us. We are young and old. We have all these parts of us, as well as we have all these memories of young and old, all these different ages, our own ages, other people's ages. So this the spirit of the past is a strange kind of figure. And again, he goes into describing it more. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head sprung a bright, clear jet of life by which everything was made visible. At the same time, he held under his arm a great extinguisher for a cap, but now he held it as under his arm. But as he looked at it, this was not even the strangest thing. For now, at its belt, sparkled and glittered one part and then another part. One part was light, another part was dark. So the figure itself fluctuated in distinctiveness, now being a thing with one arm, one leg, 20 legs, a pair without legs, now a head without a body, of dissolving parts. No outline could be visible in the dense gloom wherein they melted away. And then in the very wonder of this, it would be itself again, distinct and clear as ever. So I think this is very much, you know, the past, right? You know, it's in dreams. It's sort of like, it's distinct, it's indistinct. We have memories, but are we really, sort of like, is it two arms or 20 arms? You know, it's all, yeah, it has a lot of fantasy to it, our memories. It has an unreality to it, and yet we identify it as real. Yeah. So he's going to now take him on a journey. Again, why is he being taken on the journey for you, his welfare and your reclamation? Rise and walk with me. Take my hand, you know, and he goes out the window with them. Scrooge is not a little scared. And all of a sudden, where do they find themselves? So this is the journey that we all need to take. And where does it begin? It begins in the past. It's like we may look at our situation now, the state of our life, state of our mind, the state of our emotion, just the way we are, conditions. But we often don't understand, how did I get here? You see, how did I get here? I just didn't appear. My life just didn't appear out of nowhere. My life today is the product, no matter whether you're in your 20s or your 40s or your 60s or your 80s, It's a product of all the things in our past. And we need to understand that, and you'll see why later. Okay? So he finds himself on a country road. He's smelling things. He's basically back in his childhood. Right? So he's seeing the country, he's seeing the lanes, he's seeing the whole environment that he wandered. And there were boys running around, people running around. Scrooge is very self-conscious. The spirit tells him, you know, don't worry, they can't see us. We are invisible to us. And then he comes to a school that's deserted, a solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still. Scrooge said he knew that boy and he knew that school, and he cried. First time he cried. Why? Because that boy was him. Yeah, so it's just very interesting, my own understanding of it. So his mother died giving birth to him, which is probably not that uncommon in those days. But because of that, his father rejected him. So he loses, for those of you like more psychologically oriented, he loses his mother at birth. His father rejects him, and basically he's raised by others, and then as soon as he's able, he's sent to boarding school, and that's where he remains. Okay, so you can see he grows up without love. You know, we see him as Scrooge. You see, we see him full-blown, but we don't understand the causes. And that's I think this is very Buddhistic in a sense, because we see lots of people in this world who are less than good, less than noble. And we have all kinds of thoughts about them, but we don't understand that they are the product of their causes and conditions, just like Scrooge, right? So we see Scrooge, you know, grew up without love, he didn't know how to make friends, right? Everybody went home for Christmas, for vacation. He stayed, right? Deserted, alone, sad. So you can see, who he is. Anyhow, so Scrooge is beginning to, his heart, and Scrooge, anyhow, it goes on, and you know, all of a sudden, anyhow, it's, and then of course, you know, good things happen. All of a sudden, when he's a teenager, his sister shows up, his father's forgiven him, invites him home. So now Scrooge is having, he's kind of returned to life, and he has a chance. But you can see the first 15, 16 years of his life, very painful, very lonely, probably very angry. And most importantly, he had no sense of love. He had never been loved. And so he did not know how to love. He didn't know how to give love. I mean, very self-enclosed in his own suffering. But anyhow, he comes home for a couple of years. His father's, taken him. He's got a sister. He's got a new lease on life. Right, and then he gets his first job, I guess, in an accounting house, and he works for this guy, Fezziwig. And Fezziwig, if you remember the movie or the story, he's a really good guy. He's a good boss, right? He pays his employees well, and all he wants to do is to make them happy, to make them enjoy, and you know, he takes good care of them. He cares about them as a family. Fezziwig is a wonderful man. And they show up on Christmas Eve, and Fezziwig's having a big party for everybody and giving them out. Scrooge is very he's happy. He's remembering. And then the ghost says to him, why do you even care about this? You know, only doing, I mean, for he's doing, he's just making a bunch of silly folks, you know, grateful for nothing. That's a tiny little thing. Small, says Scrooge, like he's beginning to get it. Yeah, I mean, come on. He only spent a little money, £3 or £4 perhaps. I mean, is that something to praise him for? You see, the ghost is echoing Scrooge, right? Putting everything in dollars and cents. It isn't that, said Scrooge, it isn't that spirit. He has the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, to make it a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks and things so slight and insignificant that it's impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. He felt the spirit's glance, stopped. What's the matter? Said the ghost. Nothing. I think it's something. No, no. I just thought I'd like to say a word or two to my own clerk just now. He's beginning to wake up a little bit. And then, a very painful scene. He's got a fiancée, basically the fiancée who has been with him from when he started out, as you know, before he hadn't had any money at all. The scene is, she's ending the relationship. Because she says, I have been replaced. I've been replaced. You are not what you were. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart, meaning when they were young, now is fraught with misery that we are now two. And she basically releases him from their engagement. It's like, you've just become somebody else. And basically she says, and she couldn't get an answer. She said, she sort of says, if you had met me right now, would you have been, would you want to marry me? And he couldn't answer. So she knew it. Yeah. And then just to kind of rub it in, he takes the final thing before the evening ends, he takes him to a house, go inside, there's a Christmas tree, everybody's happy, lots of kids, the Victorian Christmas scene, and the husband turns to his wife and said, guess who I ran into the street today? Mr. Scrooge. I passed his office window, and it was not shut up like it's Christmas Eve, he should, but he had a candle inside. I couldn't help seeing him, his partner lying upon the point of death, and there he sat alone, quite alone in the world. So, of course, this woman is his fiancée, who's obviously gone on, has a family, quite happy, and he's alone. Spirit, said Scrooge in a broken voice, take me away. I told you these were the shadows of things that have been. They are what they are. Do not blame me. So now you understand what that light was about. Right? That light in his belt, that light it lights up the past. It lets us see it as it really is. Right? So we can see clearly. They are what they are. Don't blame me. Take me away. I cannot bear it. Take me back. Leave me. Haunt me no longer. Scrooge tried to press that cap down on his head to shut the light off, and they're kind of struggling. But as try as he had, he could not shut out the light. It came out in an unbroken stream. And then he awoke back in his bed. And then about an hour later, gets a little refreshing nap. He has another visit. And this is, what is this? This is the spirit of Christmas present. You remember him? It's all that. So this is the present. And basically, I'll go through this one quickly. But basically, and it's funny, I did a little reading about it a couple of years ago. Before Dickens, Christmas was more of a religious holiday. Time to go to church, have dinner with the family. But the whole Victorian thing with the, you know, over the top kind of decorations and the, you know what I'm talking about, right? That comes from pages and pages of description that Dickens put in his book, The Christmas Carol. And so, and you know, this is 1843, and the English society, those that could afford it, adopted that as what Christmas should really be. So this kind of over the top, everybody presents and special foods and decorations, and you know what I'm saying? What's supposed to become our Christmas was really created by Dickens in A Christmas Carol. Yeah, so I don't know, it's, I mean, Dickens was a, what was he? What would we call him today? Incredibly socially conscious, right? He was very aware of the disparities of wealth. He was very aware of the condition of the poor. And, you know, if you know his other novels, right? Oliver Twist, and, right, things like that, he really empathize with the situation and really tried to strike the social conscience of his readers. And again, I mean, he visited Cratchit's home, he visited his nephew's home. And do you remember Bob Cratchit's son, Tiny Tim? Remember Tiny Tim? Remember he was a crippled boy and he had a disease and very sweet. So they're at Christmas, you know, again, not being observed. Cratchit's very simple Christmas. And again, you know, even though they're poor, lots of love and caring. And Scrooge says, "Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live." You see, Scrooge is beginning to wake up a little bit. "I see a vacant seat," said the ghost, "in the poor chimney corner. A crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die." "Oh no," said Scrooge. "Oh, kind spirit, say he'll be spared. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, no one will ever find him here again." "But so what if he dies?" "He'd better do it. Won't that decrease the surplus population?" Sharp ghost. Yeah. Scrooge hung his head to hear his own words quoted by the spirit and was overcome with penitence and grief. "Man," he's talking to Scrooge, "if you truly are a human being, a man in your heart, forbear that wicked cant, that wicked way of speaking, until you have really discovered what this surplus really is and where it is." You know, in other words, we, you know, isn't that like our society? You know, we talk about, what do we talk about? The underprivileged, you know what I mean? We have words, you know, the poor, you know, income disparity, right? You see, we have these words, right? But we don't have the human being behind the words, the situation. And we're seeing that what's going on with Scrooge is all of a sudden he's experiencing human beings behind the words, you know, like, "Oh, remember you said surplus population, you know, they should die. So what? You know, another poor person dead, so what?" Right. All of a sudden when he sees, "Oh no, these are human beings, just like me." I often say to our members, who come to us in Nebraska, you know, and we have a lot of homeless, we have a lot of, you know, drug, you know, stuff still on Nebraska Avenue, you know, and some people are uncomfortable, you know what I'm saying? Uncomfortable. Because we see these people as strangers, you see. But I often say to my members, what if you saw somebody and you looked and you realized, wow, that was somebody I went to high school with, right? Or that was somebody my son or daughter went to school with. Can you see, as soon as you created relationship, you would be very different the way you respond to that person. The same person, right? But when we experience a sense of connection, of relationship, our sense of responsibility to them, our interest in them, or our caring about them, perhaps changes. I think that's what's going on. It may be that, you know, he said, you know, or is it your decision to decide who shall live and who shall die? It may be in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor person's child. So a wise, wise person. And again, he takes them, you know, it's sort of like a fantasy thing, you know, they can kind of time travel, you know, so he travels all around the world and he goes into houses of wealthy, he goes into homes of miners, he goes into, you know, people out in a lighthouse out at sea, and basically shows the commonality that all of them, you know, in his way, can have this spirit of Christmas, can have this spirit of fellowship, can experience connection, you know, with other human beings on Christmas. He even goes and visits his nephew. And it's interesting, you know, talk about psychology. Guess what? His nephew, remember he was so hateful toward? Guess what? His sister, Scrooge's sister Fran, this is her son. She died in childbirth, giving birth to him. I mean, that's very interesting, you know, when you look at it that way. And so therefore he's always been hateful and rejecting to his nephew, the same way his father was to him. So you see these patterns are often passed on unconsciously from generation to generation. Anyhow, he hears them talking about him. Actually, you know, like at the table, they're talking about his Uncle Scrooge. I was only going to say, said the nephew, that the consequence of his taking a dislike to us and not making merry with us, as I think, that he loses, that he's the loser. He's the loser. I'm sure he loses pleasant companions, more better companions that he can find from his own thoughts, either in his moldy old office or in his dusty chambers. And it's my intention every year to give him a chance, whether he likes it or not, for I have compassion for him. He may rail against Christmas till he dies, but I will defy him because I will go year after year, always in good temper, and say to my Uncle Scrooge, how are you? If it only puts in his veins even to leave his poor clerk some money in his will, that would be something. You know, if I can shake him up even a little bit. So, and on, much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, but always with happy ends. The spirit of Christmas stood beside sick beds, and people were cheerful in foreign lands, and they were close at home. They stood by struggling men, and they were patient in their great hope, by poverty, and it was rich, and almshouses, hospital, jails, and misery's every refuge, where vain men in their little brief authority have not made fast the door, and barred the spirit out, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge another way. And all of a sudden, just before he leaves, the Scrooge looks down and you know, the guy, the spirit of Christmas present, is wearing a big robe, and all of a sudden he sees two little feet sticking out from under the robe. I see something strange. protruding from your skirt, your skirts, you know, his robe. Is it a foot or a claw? It might be a claw for the flesh there is, but it's got flesh upon it, said the spirit's sorrowful reply. Look here. And unfolding his robe, he brought out two children, two little children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon its garments. Look, exclaimed the ghost of Scrooge, look, they were a boy and a girl. Yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, but also sort of kowtowing in their humility. Where graceful youth should have filled their features out and touched them with his freshest tints, there was a stale and shriveled hand, like that of old age, pinched, twisted. Where angels might have sat enthroned, devils lurked and glared out menacingly. No change, no degradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade, through all the mysteries of wonderful creations, as monsters half so horrible and dread. Right? So it's, again, what's he talking about? He sees these children, you know, totally, you know, what are they? They're like a perversion of what a human being could be. Right? They could be angels, he said. Look, look what's been done to them. I mean, I think, again, that speaks, I think we all know what that speaks to in our own world. Scrooge started back, appalled. Having them shown to him in this way, he tried to say they were fine children, they were good children, but the words choked in himself, because he could not be a party to a lie of such magnitude, to pretend that everything was okay. Spirit, are these your children? No, they are yours. And they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. The boy, he is ignorance. The girl is want. Beware of them both in all of their degree, but most of all, beware the boy. But on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased. Deny it. But, I mean, you understand what he's saying, right? He's basically saying that in these totally deprived children, whose minds, you know, have been forced to live, you know, have created such misery, but also created such anger, right? I mean, I'm just simplifying. He's saying to him, watch out, right? Because they will one day be big. This is the future, right? See them, really very, very insightful. And Scrooge says, but isn't there a resource for them? Isn't there a refuge, you know, to help them? And the spirit, turning on Scrooge for the last time, with his own words said, are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? We obviously in our own society have a thing about putting young people in prison. So now, again, ends up in his own bed, and all of a sudden, the last phantom slowly, gravely approaches him. But this was a different spirit. It seemed to move like a shadow in a deep gloom. Dark garments, everything dark, save one outstretched hand coming out of the darkness. He felt that it was tall and stately when it came beside him, but its presence filled him with dread. He could not know what to do because the spirit neither spoke nor moved. Am I in the presence of the Christmas, the ghost of Christmas yet to come? Said Scrooge. No answer. Just point. You're about to show me the shadows of things that might not have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so? Slowly, the spirit just kind of inclined its head. That was its only answer. Although now he was used to hanging out with ghosts, that's my own words, he was used to ghostly company. By this time, he feared the silent shape so much that his legs trembled beneath him, and he found he could hardly stand. The spirit paused a moment, observing him, giving him a little time to recover. Scrooge was even more terrified, horrified, to know that behind the dusky shroud there were ghostly eyes intent upon him. Ghosts of the future, I fear you more than the other specters I've seen tonight. But I know now that your purpose is to do me good, and I hope to live to be another man from what I was. I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? So, this is our trajectory, right? I mean, even though this is extreme, our trajectory of healing and transformation, our trajectory of waking up, our trajectory of really becoming the truest potential that each of us have in us. See, the journey, many people want to go right to the future. I want to skip all this other stuff, right? I want to start afresh. But as we've learned, we all carry the chains of our past, right? And so I think this journey is very insightful that this is where it begins. We need to understand who we are. We need to understand the causes and conditions that have created us so we can truly understand that if we had not been through those causes and conditions, we may be very different today. You see, we identify ourselves as we are, like Scrooge identified himself. See, he was perfectly at home with who he was. Remember him? Even though outwardly everybody would say, what a miserable human being he is, right? Everybody agreed. And yet in him, he thought he was totally living the life, you see? But because of the journey, you see, the journey both into the past where he saw how, you know, these situations had just conditioned him to become a certain kind of person, right? And he saw all these opportunities, these potentials that he had that he did not take advantage of as his life developed. And then in his journey with the spirit of Christmas present, he got a sense of, oh, there is another way to live a life, you see? I mean, that's basically what the spirit said. You know, he said, oh, there is another way to live life, right? A good way to live life, a happy way to live life, a life of connection to human beings and taking happiness and enjoyment, and a life of compassion and caring about other human beings and their suffering. Right? So he's, you know, he's almost there. See, he's almost there. And he'd like to kind of just stop there, you know? But what he's meeting now is the truth of impermanence, right? That we are only here a short time, you see? Because you can have insights, you can go there, you know, there must be another way to live, or I found other ways to live, I read it, I heard it, you know, and there's plenty of time, you see? So now he meets the ghost of the future. I fear you more than any others, but I know you mean to do me good, I hope to live to be another man. I'm prepared to bear your company. Do it with a thankful heart. Please speak to me. Nope, just points. Lead on. The night is going fast, and there's precious time to me. I know. Sense of life is different. Anyhow, basically what he takes him through is this experience of hearing about somebody who has died, right? And these are like his business companions, other people are talking about somebody they obviously didn't like who has died, right? Of course, we know what's really going on here. They're talking about him. And then after that, he takes him to the part of town. It's a pawn shop, all right? It's what we would call a pawn shop, but it's really not it's not a nice pawn shop. It's like, you know, dirty and full of rags and, you know, just a kind of a low place, right? And basically he sees these three people. One of them's an undertaker, one of them's a washerwoman, and one of them's a charwoman, like a cleaning woman. He recognizes them, right? And what are they there? They all have things that they've come to sell, the pawn, right? To the pawn master. What are these things? The undertaker, right? The one who must have taken the body, has like his, you know, a watch, has a ring, you know, has a pen, you know, has the, you know, the silver cufflinks, right? So he got that stuff. And then, one of the women had the clothes, his clothes, shoes, and the other woman had all the drapes from the walls and everything. Basically, these were because he died alone. See, he died alone. There was absolutely nobody there. And so just these people who were sort of, these two women who kind of, you know, did his wash and kind of took care of him or his needs, and then the undertaker, they basically had just stolen everything from him. And they're talking they're laughing and talking to the pawnbroker about this miserable human being who was all alone. And, you know, why should we leave him anything? I mean, he's only going to die. I mean, he's dead. You know, he doesn't need any of this. And he's helpful to us. He comes to realize he brought him to the house where he's laid out now he's just laid out in a very cheap sheet because they stole everything else. I mean, he's just, what can I say? His heart breaks when he realizes that is him laying there. And then he takes him to another place, to the Cratchit's house, and they're all in mourning. Tiny Tim has died. Yeah, so it's kind of sad. But I think it's in the book also to show the difference between the way a man alone, nobody, no connections, how he died and how people talked to him. And then he came to the Cratchit family and how they were, you know, a family of love and caring. And even though Tiny Tim had died, they were, great love for Tiny Tim. Great love for each other, supportive of each other. And then there's one more thing, where he takes him to the graveyard, right? I think you remember this saying, he keeps pointing. And then finally, Scrooge, of course, is terrified. "But before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question," said Scrooge. "Are these the shadows that will be, or are these the shadows that may be only?" This is key. You know, and this is for those who try to understand Buddhist concept of karma. It's not fate, it's not predestination. It's simply, you know, like with Scrooge, the causes and conditions of his life have brought him to a place, and it will end in death, like it ends for all of us. So there's an immediacy now that there wasn't there when he just visited with the second spirit. Death makes everything, impermanence makes everything much realer to us, because we don't know how much time we have, you see, to change. So therefore, if we want to change, we have to do it when? Now. And it's also important to understand that whatever our condition, and I think Scrooge is so good because, you know, each of us have our own karma, right? But, you know, Scrooge had a very extreme one, you know what I mean? And just the way he lived it and manifest in his miserableness. And so, you know, Scrooge has had these experiences during the course of this night that have totally opened him. Not only opened him up into his insight into his own suffering, but he also opened him up to the potential of how he could live a different life and relate to differently things. And so this is like the key question to him. Am I seeing the way it's going to unfold? You know, is there no way to stop this process? You know, does it have to continue this way? Do I always have to be the same person endlessly repeating the same situations? Or is really saying, is change possible? Still, the ghosts pointed downward. And then, you know, poor Scrooge, he says, the course of a human being's life foreshadows certain events. And if they're persevered in, that's where they will lead. But if one changes the course of one's life, will the ends change, right? Again, saying, you know, if we change the way we are, the way we act, the way we respond, the quality of our life, can we change? Say, tell me that it's true, tell me that what's true. Spirit of impermanence, death, immovable. Am I that man who laid upon the bed? Remember in the room, the finger pointed from the grave, to Scrooge, to the grave. You are that man. Oh no, oh no, oh no. Spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. I will not be the man I have been. This whole evening has changed me. Why show me my death and all this if I am past all hope? Good spirit, please, please, you know, pity me, intercede for me. Assure me that I can change these shadows and live an altered life. Right. The hand that was so disappointed began to tremble a little bit. I promise I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all year round. I'll live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I shall not shut out the lessons that they've taught me. Oh, tell me that I may sponge away the writing on the stone. The writing on the stone. Stone is his name, you know. And it's, again, I think this is very profound. You know, we have to live, each of us, with the spirits of all three. We have to know the karma. We have to know our causes and conditions that have created us. We need to know the possibilities that are accessible to us for change and transformation. And then we have to truly believe that change is possible, that we can be different, that our future can be different, that we can change the patterns if we want to change it. In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty, and he held it. The spirit, stronger yet, pushed him away. Holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reverse, he saw an alteration had happened in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. So, right now comes the Enlightenment. Enlightenment means he wakes up from all this. And he realizes he's still alive. And he looks around and he's back in his bedroom, right? There's no dead person on the bed. And the sheets are still there. And the drapes are still there. And everything was just the way he had left it, right? So, oh, the kids. You can come on in. Let me just finish the story. We're telling stories in here. Okay, I'm just finishing a story, kids. Okay. So he's basically in ecstasy. He's alive. He understands the spirits of all three will live within me. I don't know what to do, he says. He's crying, he's laughing in the same breath. I'm as light as a feather, I'm as happy as an angel, I'm as merry as a schoolboy, I'm as giddy as a drunken man. Merry Christmas, everybody, Merry Christmas. So this is very, I mean, to me, this is very much like an Enlightenment experience, because he's what? He's unburdened, you see? He's unburdened. He's unburdened by his past. He's free. So he feels light. Many of us, we don't realize that our thoughts weigh us down. Our causes and conditions weigh us down, and we get heavy. We're not light beings. We're not free. And so he basically, and again, as you remember the story, he goes around, does lots of good for everybody. He's a changed man. He runs into those people who had asked him for money, remember, and he offers them money. He raises Tom Cratchit's salary. Goes to visit his uncle, embraces him. I mean, his nephew, you know. Scrooge was, and this is the last paragraph. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he became a second father. He became a good a friend, as good a master, as good a man, as the old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he laughed. And he didn't really take heed of them. He was wise enough to know that nothing happened on this globe for good at which some people did not laugh at the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it was quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins rather than having a malady in less attractive forms. The most important thing is that his own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits ever afterwards. And it was said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas as well as any human being possibly could. So that's the Dharma of Scrooge. As I said, I think it's all there. I don't think I'm reading into it. I think that Dickens really had a very profound view. I mean, when you look into, and you know, I left out a lot. I mean, I think he knew what he was up to. So it's a real story of you know, renewal. So I share it with all of you.